Hollywood comes to Dublin. We love movies with Gordon Hayden. Spin 103.8.
Now on We Love Movies, we are going to take a look at Kong Skull Island, which is the behemoth blockbuster playing in cinemas this weekend. Roy Cashin very shortly will be joining me in studio to review the film. But first, let us hear from one of its stars, the Oscar-winning Brie Larson. You might remember last year she won for her role in Room. Well, here she is now on We Love Movies talking to us about King Kong's place in cinematic history.
Kong is such a huge part of the mythology of cinema, and it tells this incredible story that is really timely, dealing with the issues that we're still dealing with today when it comes to man versus nature. So if we want to talk about agriculture or war, these huge things that we are still grappling with as human beings and trying to find a way, instead of fighting with something, to actually work with it. And I think this is such a great way of telling that story in a way that's still fun and entertaining and interesting to watch.
And here is Brie Larson once again on We Love Movies, telling us about her first time experiencing the character of King Kong.
We had the original movie poster in my house growing up, which is very spooky. And then I saw the Peter Jackson one in the theaters. That was the only one that I was alive to see in the theaters. But I think that in general, I mean, the Kong imagery is just everywhere. You know, you don't even have to have seen the movies to know who Kong is.
Joining me now in studio to review Kong Skull Island is Rory Cashin. So, Rory, we should say that this is not a sequel to Peter Jackson's movie.
Nope.
Like, this is not like King Kong's Son or anything like that.
No.
In fact, this is more like the prequel to the recent Godzilla movie.
It is, yeah. It's set in the 70s on the tail end of the Vietnam War. That would make it the 60s, would it? Whenever the Vietnam War was. I don't pretend to be a historian, Gordon. But this takes place in the final days of the Vietnam War. And there's a new company called Monarch, who everyone should probably know from the Godzilla films. They were the company that was chasing after Godzilla. And they believe they've discovered a new island that no previous satellites or mapping or anything has ever discovered. So they want to go there and see if it maybe has some bountiful new elements or whatever people go looking at new islands for. So off they go with a military escort. And it's not long before they run into a giant monkey and swats all the helicopters out of the sky, and then they have 2 days to get across the islands and hopefully find a way off without being, you know, monkey food.
All right, here is a clip from the film. John Goodman, he plays this real shady government type, and here he is talking to Samuel L. Jackson's Lieutenant Colonel Preston Packard. I'm all about what awaits them on this island.
You are going to tell me everything I don't know, or I'm going to blow your head off.
Monsters exist. Yesterday I was a crackpot. But today?
You dropped those charges to flush something out.
Who are you? Ancient species owned this earth long before mankind, and if we keep our heads buried in the sand, they will take it back. My agency is known as Monarch. We specialize in the hunt for massive unidentified terrestrial organisms.
You knew that thing was out here?
I'm sorry for your men, Colonel. I truly am. Get us home with proof so we can send the cavalry.
Now, Tom Hiddleston, he stars in the movie, and we recently caught up with him along with Samuel L. Jackson to get their thoughts on the story to Kong Skull Island.
It's an origin story, one that's very different from the ones that we've seen in terms of finding this island and realizing there was a whole species of this animal and other animals that are very different than any other animals we've seen, definitely bigger. And being able to sort of trace a history of a whole ecosystem that was very different than any ecosystem that we've seen in any of the other Kong movies.
Kong has been reconceived as a myth come to life, an idea in the mind of man that could not possibly exist, the answer to a theoretical equation. He is truly monstrous in size and scale and scope. He's 90 feet tall, so taller than people have been used to. And his power is unknown. And I think the journey of Kong in Skull Island is that he goes from being a figure of terror, an alpha predator who seems to be a destructive threat, but he becomes an emblem of the natural order.
So there's Tom Hiddleston and Samuel L. Jackson, Rory, talking to us about the story for Kong Skull Island. It feels like it's a real throwback, this movie. It's almost like it wants to be a pulpy action adventure. You know what? I don't know if anyone of a certain vintage would remember these movies because they were played on TV quite a lot. I remember as a kid, the Doug McClure action adventure flicks, The Earth Center, something like that, and The Land That Time Forgot. These sort of cheesy dinosaur type movies. And there's almost this pulpy feeling that I'm getting from Kong Skull Island.
Yeah, there definitely is a whiff of that. And I think that is a very good thing because there's only so serious you can take a film that involves what is essentially a giant monkey trying to save a group of humans from giant spiders and giant squids and stuff. Like, it is just one of those The Land That Time Forgot kind of films set in the 70s but made with today's technology. And that, to me, sounds like a great time, and that's exactly what this is. They got like a really, really top tier cast, and everyone in it is having a blast, especially John C. Reilly, because he is helicoptered in from a completely different film and is having just the time of his life, being a completely bonkers off the wall man.
Yeah, he's been living on the island for a period of time, so much so that he's a very much a man out of time.
Yeah. He crash landed there in the middle of World War II. So the the culture shock of anyone else who's a speaking English and B, not a giant monkey, is like really good news to him. But he's also very aware of the dangers of the Skull Island that they've all landed on. So he's efficiently like really lost his marbles, and he just has a lot of fun playing that bonkers character. And that kind of sense of humor is absolutely necessary for a film like this, because as much as I actually will defend the 2014 Godzilla, whenever that was, the recent one, it was a bit too serious for its own good.
But the characters were very dull in it, Rory. Alan Taylor Johnson, who has actually started to come across as quite a good actor, which I never thought I'd hear myself say that. No. Now, he was in Nocturnal Animals, for those who don't know, got nominated in various different award ceremonies. He came across so well in that film. But he has made some awful rubbish as well. And he was in Godzilla, and I just went, oh no.
He's so dull.
He's, again, you know that fella, he was in the Divergent movies, Theo James. Again, one of those type actors,
I felt. Handsome but vapid.
Yeah. So the characters, even though you've got great actors playing them in Godzilla, in Kong, are they a bit one note though? Is there a bit more to them than Godzilla?
They're allowed to have a bit more fun within their own realm. Like Samuel L. Jackson is playing a very single-minded man who has just kind of been told they have to retreat from Vietnam, and now he's been sent into Skull Island, and this is something he's definitely not going to retreat from. So he's gone full Apocalypse Now bonkers, and you can see like the madness is in those Samuel L. Jackson eyes. And if anyone has intense eyes, it's Sam Jackson, and he does them really, really well. And everyone is just allowed to have that bit more looseness to their characters, or that just a bit more OTT, because in Godzilla, in trying to make it so realistic, you know, how would the world react if this actually happened? Unfortunately, we were left with Aaron Taylor Johnson and Bryan Cranston and Elizabeth Olsen and all these people who had to react realistically. And you don't really want that level of realism when you've got a giant lizard knocking over cities. Like, you just, there's the fun bit. Give me the fun bit. And you know, that was the problem with Godzilla as well. Like, it was an hour and a half before you got a good glimpse of it. And in this, it's like 45 seconds and you're like, there he is.
It seems like they've definitely rectified those particular problems.
He's on the poster.
All in all though, Rory, it sounds like this is really good fun. But what's quite interesting, just before we get scores and that, is the way critics are viewing this film. Over this side of the world, I'm seeing like lots of 4 stars and everyone's like, ah, look, it is what it is. It's good fun and that's the way to take it. But then, if we look at our friends stateside, they are not loving it for some reason.
No, and I'm not like fully understanding why. It's like they're not enjoying the fun of it or whatever it is. Like, they think it's too campy, or they think that this film is actually not so much, you know, nodding towards Apocalypse Now as it is extracting the urine from it. I don't know. It's one of those things where, like, remember years ago, everyone on this side of the pond kind of hated The World's End, and everyone in America thought it was the greatest comedy of the year, and we were like, nah, you're wrong. They're wrong again. I'm sorry, American friends, but you're wrong.
Well, Rory, while you're trying to figure out your scores there for it, I just want to play some more audio just quickly of Tom Hiddleston and Sam Jackson again, because here they are talking about what audiences can expect from this new version of King Kong. Plus, Sam Jackson talks about the appeal of Kong Skull Island.
This film will be an immersive spectacle. I think it will be breathtakingly beautiful. It'll be the most thrilling action. It'll feel very rugged and raw and exciting.
I like, because I went to see it when I was a kid, and it was a great story, and it was an adventure, and but it was in the city, you know, and he was on buildings that I could recognize and swatting down planes, and he had a little bitty woman in his hand. And it was high adventure for us. So when I had an opportunity to do it, it was like, okay, this should be fun, especially if we're going to be in a place that's his origin. So it combines a lot of the elements that, you know, kids like. It's a high adventure story in a jungle in an unknown place with, you know, not just Kong, but other things that might kill you. So it was kind of tempting to get in there and do that.
So, Rory, the moment has come to get your scores on Kong Skull Island.
7.5 out of 10. Okay. It is really good fun. It's the most fun I've had at a blockbuster in a long time, because they're always so dour and taking themselves so seriously. You can't even go to a comic book movie anymore without ultra-violence and political tones and stuff. And in this, it's just a big monkey throwing trees at helicopters.
When are we going to see Kong against Godzilla? Because that's what it's all leading up to. Because we're getting a Godzilla sequel, I think, in 2 years' time. Is that when they'll face off with each other, or is it another film?
There is a Godzilla 2, King of the Monsters, is out in 2018, I think. And then it's Godzilla vs. King Kong in 2019.
Ah, okay, so all right.
We have that to look forward to.
Well,
monkeys versus lizards.
Wait and see. Roy, you're going to be back a little later on. We're going to be reviewing L, which I'm really intrigued to talk about.
Literally, the most diametrically opposed film you could imagine to King Kong. So this is a lovely week for cinema goers.
When Hollywood comes to Dublin, we love movies with Gordon Hayden. Spin 103.8.
Now, as you would have heard, we just reviewed Kong Skull Island. We're now going to take a look at some really good, but also some really bad monster movies. Andy McCarroll joins me over the phone. Let's start with the good, Andy, before we move into the absolute terrible. We're going to kick off with Cloverfield. Now, what I suppose the real talking point about this one initially was the marketing campaign. Just remind people of how effective it was.
It was. It was one of the first kind of mainstream viral films to catch on. Now, I don't know if you remember, but the trailer for that played before Transformers. And what it was literally the scene in the film where the Statue of Liberty tumbles down the street, the head from the Statue of Liberty with a claw mark. You hear a scream, and then the tape just comes up. It didn't give you the name, didn't give you who was in it. And it just created this incredible buzz. Soon after then, there was the kind of the reveal to go to a website. And I have to say, I fell for everything hook, line, and sinker. I fell down the rabbit hole completely with that. I knew every secondary character. I knew every fake company that was associated with it. I bought in completely. And that kind of built the mythos for it before. Because it was a film that was made on a very low budget. And to have a monster film that, you know, isn't very special effects heavy, I thought that was a stroke of genius to get people really invested in the story before even seeing the film. And you can kind of see it now. Every film has its own, you know, fake website or fake TED talk to try and push it. And I think Cloverfield was one of the first to really get people on board with things like that.
And also, it happened at a time when the found footage vibe was still of interest, because Paranormal Activity was released in and around that time too, whereas now the found footage has been done to death.
It has, and that at the time was kind of the one that was done something different. Like, we'd seen the Paranormal Activities and, you know, the Blair Witch Project and very kind of low budget horror films, and it was rare to see something that is usually such, you know, the likes of Godzilla with the huge budget. Like, a monster film tends to be something, you know, this massive 100, 200 million production. Mm-hmm. But to do it for such a small scale, but do it through the kind of the street level handheld view, was something that hadn't been done before. And I thought that was a really nice spin on the genre, and one of the reasons why I really, really like the film. It'd be one of my favourite monster films now of all time.
Oh, there we go. High praise there from our Andy. Now, let's move on to Godzilla. We should just say this is not the 1988 film. 1998, wasn't it?
98,
when it came out. The 2014 film, directed by Gareth Edwards. This is the Kong Skull Island, which is out this weekend. I was saying earlier on, essentially the prequel to this movie. But Godzilla, was it a gamble initially bringing, do you think, this character back up onto the big screen?
It was, because the 98 film, even though it's kind of, it's still very well known and something everyone could kind of associate with. Like, it's something everyone has seen. And by coming back into that, I think a lot of people were still, you know, of the opinion that this was somehow related to it. And it was a gamble in the sense that it wasn't that, like, it was 98, it wasn't that far between films, that people still had that very fresh in their mind. And it is a gamble to bring back a character like that, like Godzilla, when people will kind of, you know, tart with the same brush as the other one. And taking it so seriously as well, you can kind of see with Kong now, they were trying to hedge their bets on that film, where they kind of have elements of humor and elements of, you know, the 1933 film. This was very much played. This is set now, and they took the story super seriously and were determined to create a kind of a world based on that, where you can see where Kong's come in now, and they're trying to make it kind of the monster movie Avengers. We've got Kong, Godzilla, Mothra all in the same film.
Yeah, every studio wants their cinematic universe. That is the byproduct now of what Marvel have done with their superheroes. We even have to look at Universal Studios, and they've got the classic monsters, as in like Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, the Mummy, and the Invisible Man, the Wolfman, and now they've got their own universe that they're building, which they'll start with the Mummy this year with Tom Cruise. So, Andy, we're going to move on next now to Jurassic Park, but before we get your thoughts on it, let's just take a clip from the film. I love this scene with Jeff Goldblum's Ian Malcolm. Here he is in the back of a Jeep, flirting outrageously with Laura Dern's character, while Sam Neill couldn't be bothered what's going on. He's got his eye on a Triceratops that's looking poorly. Here's that clip from Jurassic Park.
Tiny variations, the orientation of the hairs on your hands.
Yeah, well, look at this.
The amount of blood distending your vessels, imperfections in the skin.
Imperfections in the skin?
Microscopic, microscopic. And never repeat and vastly affect the outcome. That's one.
Unpredictability.
Right. There. Look at this. See? See? I'm right again. Nobody could have predicted that Dr. Grant would suddenly jump out of a moving vehicle. There's another example. See, here I'm now by myself talking to myself. That's chaos theory.
Now, Andy, we're going to get some trivia off you about Jurassic Park, because Sam Neill, he wasn't the initial first choice to play Dr. Alan Grant. Who was?
No, there's a couple of interesting ones with that. The first one that was actually offered it was William Hurt, who turned it down flat, wouldn't even read the book. The second one they went to was Harrison Ford, who was supposedly semi-interested in this, but once he read the Michael Crichton book, he wasn't a big fan and didn't think it would do particularly well. Now, ironically, quite a lot of the book is thrown out and the screenplay is, you know, it's kind of, you know, 20% of the book is retained and 80% is kind of the screenplay. There was also Sean Connery was offered the role, the Hammond that Richard Attenborough was eventually coaxed out of retirement. So it could have been a kind of a very different film with those two actors in it.
Very much so. Now, also, we all know that Steven Spielberg directed the film, but is it true that James Cameron flirted with the idea of making it?
They did. Michael Crichton had kind of said he didn't want to get into a bidding war, so he kind of put up a flat fee, $1.5 million for whoever wants the rights, and obviously he'd get money on the back end depending on how well it done. And the last two people to kind of, you know, be interviewed essentially for the role was James Cameron and Steven Spielberg. Now, James Cameron called Steven Spielberg kind of independently of this and asked Steven Spielberg, well, what are you planning to do with it? And Spielberg pitched, you know, the idea of, you know, the theme park on Wild be very much a kind of a kid's movie. And James Cameron was going to do it a much more kind of violent dinosaurs on the rampage, sort of similar to Aliens. Mm. He was also looking to cast Arnold Schwarzenegger as Alan Grant. The late, great Bill Paxton was going to be Ian Malcolm and Charlton Heston was going to play Hammond. But after he spoke to Steven Spielberg, he kind of was of the opinion, well, I think yours is better than mine, so I'm going to bow out here and, you know, it's all yours, essentially.
Ah, that's interesting. How much money did Steven Spielberg make for Jurassic Park?
He made, and it's still a record to this day, he actually made $250 million just from the first film. This isn't counting the sequel or, you know, any stakes he gets in Jurassic World or any of the follow-up sequels. But it's still the record now for the most salary ever received for any film, for just one film, $250 million, which, you know, isn't a bad payday at all.
Oh, my God. Now, Andy, we're going to have to move on to your worst films. And the first film out of the gate is Anaconda. But before we hear your thoughts on it, let's just take a little clip from the film.
Paul has been here. And if we help him catch this snake, then he will help us get out of here alive. And that, amigos, is not insanity. That is common freaking sense.
Come on, Gary. This isn't you. Honey, what did he do
stop.
To you?
Okay, stop. Think about how much money this would be worth. Imagine capturing something like this on film for the first time ever. Let's be honest. What else are we supposed to do?
I know what I'm gonna do. I'm about to throw both of y'all son of bitches in the river myself.
Anaconda, and they've actually made some direct-to-DVD online sequels. The third film actually stars David Hasselhoff. But people might be hard-pressed to remember the cast in the original film, so we'll remind them. Ice Cube was in there, a young Jennifer Lopez, along with a very young-looking Owen Wilson. And John Voight is in this too. How bad are we talking, Andy? I never saw Anaconda.
Have you not?
No.
For someone a horror film like that, now I have to say that's a big surprise you haven't seen that. It's absolutely horrendous, but I'm not going to lie, I kind of like it. It's got this gravity-defying snake that's, you know, chewing its way through the scenery almost as bad as John Voight is, and it's, you know, picking off the random cast of characters one by one. They're going into, you know, there's this kind of lost tribe they're looking for, and John Voight's very much the kind of, you know, the Quint from Jaws or the Ahab trying to track down this mythical beast. But kind of one of my favorite stories from this, I remember the anaconda, and a real life anaconda was brought out on the Jay Leno chat show. And they had one of the animal handlers, you know, standing there with Jay Leno, and Jennifer Lopez was on the couch with him. And Jay Leno, you know, kind of just starts chatting to him, says, "Oh, what did you think of the film?" He's like, "Oh, I didn't like it." And Jay Leno said, "Oh, is that because the snake wasn't portrayed realistically?" He goes, "Oh, no, it was just a terrible film." While Jennifer Lopez is sitting there looking at him.
Says it all, Andy. And finally, now, Andy, on your worst list, we mentioned Godzilla earlier on, but there is that 1998 version directed by Roland Emmerich.
Yeah, and this is something I was really, really looking forward to. Like, there's that 30-second teaser trailer where it's the T-Rex skeleton in the museum. All of a sudden, you see the foot come crashing through the ceiling and destroys it. Now, amazingly, that teaser actually cost $600,000, and the footage itself doesn't even finish, isn't, you know, in the finished film. I was absolutely dying to see. Like, I'm giant monster movie mad, and for me, kind of the reveal is all, and I think that's something the new Kong film doesn't do well at all. It shows everything in the first few minutes, but Godzilla, to its credit, you know, teased out, you saw, you know, the clips with his feet, there was buses going around America with you know, his tail is longer than this bus, and it really created a sense of excitement for this film, and I was absolutely dying to see it walking into the cinema. And then this just horrendous kind of Jurassic Park light film that was just, the tone is all over the place. Like, Matthew Broderick spends the whole film looking like a deer in the headlights. His co-star, Maria Patillo, that plays his girlfriend, and she is absolutely horrendous in the film. Even Jean Reno, I should say, from Leon, who's just the king of cool. And he's turned into this kind of bumbling comic relief, and you're nearly kind of cringing yourself in half as he's doing, you know, these American officer impersonations or being really French and trying to find the perfect cup of coffee. It just, none of it seems to make any sense. It just seems like they're all kind of in different films but lumped together.
No, that's, you hit the nail on it. It just doesn't make any sense at all. Andy, unfortunately time has caught up with us, but thank you so much for taking a look at some of the best and worst monster movies. You'll be back in part two of We Love Movies to go through this week's movie news. Plus, we'll be taking a look at the thriller L. That's all to come very shortly right here on We Love Movies.